to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And we are back for a, I guess, a reboot, so to speak,
yeah,
or a season two, volume two.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it. We're going to redo Rebel Radio. We're still going to be funny, we hope. And we're going to bring you the latest cool news, but we're going to be more movie-based.
Yeah. I'll always be funny to me. Yeah, I crack myself up all the time.
We just felt that it was time to revive the show, that we had run its course with the format of talking about what's hot and new or different movie list.
Yeah.
And we just felt that going to 2018, it was time for a revival.
Yes.
Not a dance revival. That would make Frank excited if he was here. But yes, there is no Frank. Frank, to use the cliche, creative differences, they use, it's actually true this time.
Yes.
Frank has decided to move on. He may appear now and then on a show, but he really didn't have an interest in just watching movies and talking about them. We are choking it up to a midlife crisis he's going through.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's a disruption in the Force, but
there could be.
I don't know if he believes in the Force
anymore. So you're mostly going to hear Matt and myself from now on. We want to have friends on the show to talk about various movies, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, if we talk about the Titanic, Frank can come over.
Yeah, or The Notebook.
Yeah, The Notebook.
God, no. So we're still going to have a lot of fun on the show, and we're just reformatting it to an extent and talking about a feature movie each show. We want to try to get more episodes out for you. We're going to try to go somewhat weekly, maybe definitely every 2 weeks, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
And to get more shows out and have more fun. In the first episode of this new format, we are going to be talking about Tim Burton's 1989 film Batman. And we're going to get to that in a minute. We just felt that was a good lead off.
Absolutely.
And we're also going to really promote this a lot on Facebook. And trustmeimajedi.com, of course, is where you can still find the Rebel Radio Podcast. And so we're going to really push the new episode and the new show. We hope that you don't get sick of us promoting it.
Yeah.
But make sure you follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And our Twitter is still jacked up.
Yeah, we're working on that.
I'm probably just going to have to redo the Twitter with a new Twitter handle, I'm thinking. That's what it's looking like. Since the bastards at Twitter don't seem to believe me that I own the account.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a long story. But other than that, going into the new year, we're excited about this new format. We hope that you go along for the ride, too, and enjoy it and see what we can talk about. If there's any movies you want us to talk about, always leave them on our Facebook. Let us know. We've got some plans for the first few, but we're open to ideas and suggestions. And before we move further, we just want to say one more thing about Frank T. Biscuit.
Good luck.
There's a lot going on behind the scenes. We won't get into, but let's just say we'll just say creative differences.
Creative differences is probably the nicest
as we
way
move
to put
forward,
it.
And maybe you'll hear his voice again, or maybe you're glad you won't hear his voice again.
Maybe you'll see him in one of those dirty movie theaters. if you could.
Oh, that's very scary. All right, so let's get into it. We are just going to discuss Batman 1989, our first movie on the new season, Volume 2 of the Rebel Radio Podcast. And this is Tim Burton's film. He directed it. Stars Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. Of course, Michael Keaton as Batman, Jack Nicholson as the Joker. And it stars Kim Basinger as the lovely Vicki Vale. And Michael Koff was Alfred. And Pat Hingle plays Commissioner Gordon. So a lot of these guys at the time for people that might be a little bit younger, these were big character actors back in that time.
Especially Basinger.
Yeah, and they were cast in their roles because they were popular, they were hot, and they were controversial, too. People back then, people think it's controversial casting Ben Affleck now as Batman. People did not like Michael Keaton as Batman either.
He was a comedian.
Yeah, and Jack Nicholson was not the first choice. In fact, We are going to discuss some unique facts about the film, but we'll tell you who was originally going to play the Joker. A lot of people don't know that. But initially, though, as far as Batman, I remember seeing it in theaters. I'm old enough, I remember standing in line for it. And it made a huge impact on me. It's probably the reason I'm such a big Batman fan today. I mean, when it comes to genre stuff, it's Star Wars, and then Batman's probably my second favorite thing in the world. And I love the character of Batman, and mostly it's because of this movie. I don't think I had read a lot of Batman comics before then, maybe a few growing up. But, man, when I walked out of the theater watching Tim Burton's Batman film, I'm like, wow, I want to be like Batman.
Well, you would have been in the same place as Tim Burton, because Tim Burton said he hadn't read a single Batman comic, or any comic for that matter, before he made the movie, but he read The Killing Joke. And he said it was the best.
And it's still the only Batman comics he's really read.
Yeah.
Tim Burton, we'll get to that in a minute, actually. Tim Burton actually really doesn't like this film.
Oh,
wow. He said it many times over the years. He's come to be willing to accept to talk about it, but he's never really been a big fan of it. He's always thought a comic movie was ridiculous. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But I think, though, that growing up, I was reading Transformers comics, G.I. Joe, stuff I was watching on TV. I remember reading Spider-Man books, but I don't think I ever got into Batman. And I had seen the Adam West show on syndication on TV and stuff, but I never really was a huge Batman fan to walking out of the theaters watching this movie. And that was my first experience with this Batman. When was the first time you saw Tim Burton's Batman?
Probably like 93, 92 earliest.
You are a little bit younger.
Yeah, it was on VHS for me. My uncle lived with me, and that's how, you know, I was introduced to all of this. My uncle, you know, went to high school at Jersey Village. They didn't want him going to high school where, you know, his parents live, where my grandparents live. So he moved in with my parents, introduced me to all the cool stuff that we talk about today. And, you know, he bought me Batman toys, and I even played that horrible Batman game on NES. it's still really hard.
It's really hard. Yeah.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And, so 93, 94, you were 7, 8 years old or so, maybe.
Yeah.
So did you like Batman before? Did you know what it was? Or you knew who he was, but were you like a fan?
But it's like, it made me a fan because of the Joker, and there was some good action in there, and the gadgets is what I liked as a kid. That's always what I kind of leaned to every time I saw a movie when I was young.
Well, it's funny. I remember initially loving the film, and then I kind of got away from it over the years. I would see it on TV now and then. I'm like, and I kind of thought at times, man, this is kind of cheeky now compared to the Nolan films. But, you know, rewatching it in preparation for this podcast, and I hadn't watched it in several years, I realized how really well done it is. It's still a very good comic book film.
It flows really well.
Yeah, it's maybe not to the standard of some of the films we have now in the current comic book genre, but it's still right up there. I could easily place this in the top 5 comic book films. I don't think anyone would question it. They would still be like, okay, that's acceptable.
Yeah, yeah, you'd have to respect the rank, so to say.
And I remember as a kid watching it, I had no idea that there could be better actors than Michael Keaton or Jack Nicholson. I never knew that one day you would have Christian Bale or Heath Ledger or whoever your favorite. To me, it was just cool to see Batman on the big screen. Yeah. I had no, at about 12 years old when it came out, I had no qualm as to who Michael Keaton was. I didn't care. I just thought, man, Batman on the big screen is really cool.
On the screen.
And so I think the film is still very good for a comic book movie.
I think so too. I mean, it starts off. I, at first, like, you know, me watching it again, I'm like, did this start out with an origin story? You know, because, you know, you have your parents, you know, being mugged in front of a kid and, you know, and then they don't die. And I'm like, what's going on? And then I see Batman overlooking and I'm like, oh, yeah. And
it is told a little bit different. Yeah,
it's told different. I like how it starts out because today it seems like every film, every comic book film has to start out with some kind of nod or ode to the origin.
Right.
You know, there's always that nod. This one, it didn't spend too much time on it.
And then, you know, people also, I remember, let's talk about the performances of the film. You know, it was controversial. Michael Keaton was signed on, and a lot was made of Jack Nicholson and his salary. It's still one of the most expensive salaries one actor has taken home from a film, because he took home almost $60 million based on royalties.
Yeah.
Because the movie made about $250 million at the American box office, which in 1989, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot.
You know, now we have Star Wars making $500, $600 million, but $250 was a lot in 1989. And, but, you know, a lot can be said about Jack's performance, but Michael Keaton, man, you know, rewatching it and not watching it, he's actually really good. He's got this smugness to him.
Yeah.
Like this rich guy smugness to him in his attitude of Bruce Wayne. And the suit is a little different, you know?
Yeah, the suit's different.
But his Bruce Wayne performance isn't that far different from Christian Bale's if you really watch it.
No,
he's kind of got this smugness to it. Like, yeah, I'm rich and I know it kind of attitude. And I really like it more now, I think, than I did. And maybe some of that's because of Keaton's current comeback. You're starting to see how good of an actor he can be.
Yeah, especially in Homecoming.
And so maybe that's, and you realize, man, he was doing this stuff back then. He was really good. And so your thoughts on Keaton now, almost 30 years later from the movie.
I like it. I have to agree with Adam West and say that, you know, he's one of the best Batman that's played, that's donned the, that's donned the cowl, so to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, he, at first the suit kind of caught me off guard. The cowl is,
and he can't move. He has to move his whole body.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't notice that when you're younger. When you watch it now, you're like, you can see him moving his entire body all the way around the turn.
I feel like I can tell he's frustrated in there. Yeah. Because I know he was frustrated. And that's, you know, I don't want to jump ahead if you were going to talk about it, but that's how he channeled his character. He felt like he had claustrophobia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he channeled that through his character. And I kind of saw it whenever I watched it this time as an older person, you know, and not as a kid.
And, Keaton is solid. And, you know, I watched Batman Returns just out of curiosity because we were covering Batman. And first off, the movie is really freaking weird. It's almost like because Batman made a lot of money, they told Tim Burton, you can do what you want with the second one. And he definitely puts his touch on it. But my point in this is not to talk about Batman Returns.
Yeah.
It's just that Keaton almost gets better in Batman Returns.
I feel like he is the best character. Yeah.
You know, he's like, he's all this weirdness going around him. And somehow Michael Keaton just puts a really good performance in the second one. But so does DeVito, even though he's a little weird. So I think Keaton, after a couple of films, really owned it, and it makes me almost wish that he would have come back for Batman Forever. Because regardless people think of the Schumacher films, I like parts of Batman Forever, and I would have liked to have seen Keaton up against Carrie and Tommy Lee Jones, maybe.
That would have been cool.
But so any more thoughts on Keaton before we talk about Jack Nicholson?
No, awesome performance. Like you said, definitely wish he would have gone and made some more films because at least it would have kept continuity. But maybe we would see him different. Maybe we would see him as like Christopher Reeve.
Maybe.
Had that happened. You never know. But it would have been nice.
So go ahead and lead off on Jack as the Joker.
So Jack, you know, and it's funny how they got him to do it. At first he kind of agreed and then he didn't want to do it.
Well,
and then they lied.
They told they were going to give the role to Robin Williams.
Yeah, and Robin Williams thought he was going to get the role, and then he found out they were just dicking with him.
Yeah, he didn't want to work for Warner Bros. For years because of it.
Yes, they finally apologized, after like Batman and Robin, after they made Batman and Robin, they finally, because I think they wanted him to play the Riddler at that point with the Batman Forever.
And he told him, screw you, no.
Yeah, screw you. He's like, I want an apology. They didn't apologize to him for a few years after that.
I think it was almost even further until he did Insomnia with Nolan, which I think was for Warner Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Insomnia, that was a good film. Creepy guy in Insomnia. But, so he takes it. Other people that were considered for the role, Tim Curry, who ended up playing Pennywise. Glad we got Nicholson. I watching his performance now, I see why people say, hey, you know, they can say, you know, Jack Nicholson, maybe he's better than Heath Ledger, and then people, of course, Heath Ledger. No, though Heath Ledger's my Joker. He was a good Joker.
My thought on that has always been two different scripts.
Yeah, two different.
Jack
scripts.
Had a campier, sillier script to work with, where Heath's was more of a serious script.
Yes,
and so I think you take into account both sides of performance: the campy Joker, but still really good, and the more serious, chaotic Joker like Heath.
And I felt like Nicholson almost felt to me like Mark Hamill's Joker a little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit like that. And it was depicted off of The Killing Joke and Frank Miller's Batman. Joker was in Frank Miller's Batman.
Yeah. Size of him. Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns Joker had a bigger, heftier Joker, and that's why they kind of went with Nicholson, a bigger, heftier, not such a thin guy like the Joker is sometimes drawn.
Right. And I think he did a great performance capturing that campiness of, you know, people like Cesar Romero and Mark Hamill's character, but still, you know, was able to pay respects to Frank Miller as far as the design. And, you know, solid performance, man. I was like, he was goofy. He was horrifying and unpredictable, just like you'd want a Joker.
Yeah, and then also I find that, you know, I remember back in the day people said that there was too much Jack in it. You know, when I watch it now, I didn't feel it as much. There's still a lot in it, but I still think the film does a good job expanding over all the other characters.
Yeah.
And one thing I like about Jack's performance is he has a lot of fun in it. You can tell he's having fun on screen. Like, Jack is truly enjoying acting this part. And, like the scene where he electrocutes a guy and he's just dancing. That's a hot time in the old town tonight. And you want to laugh at it because it's funny, even though it's evil. And that's just Jack bringing out his best, because Jack Nicholson's one of our great actors of our time.
He is.
And I think he's fantastic in the role. And I still think he does, years later, it's still really well done. Even at the part at the end of the cathedral where he's starting to lose it and he's just dancing. He, he's completely lost at this point.
Yeah,
we,
you know,
we know he's going apeshit crazy. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's Jack at his best, you know, and not that Jack never phoned in a performance. I think it'd be hard to find a Jack Nicholson film where he phoned it in.
No.
But he's, and but I really like him in the Joker role.
I mean, they were talking to Jack ever since Witches of Eastwick in 86.
Yeah.
Same producer, I believe, for Eastwick and Batman.
My only thing I don't like in this film as a Batman fan is the fact that they gave him another name. They called the Joker Jack. And that there was never a there's never been a Joker origin in the comics except for the Killing Joke in a way. But I didn't like the Joker's always been nameless, and I didn't like that.
Napier,
Napier.
Napier.
Yeah. I didn't like that part.
It was an ode. It was they said it was an ode to the former Alfred,
right?
That played in
and the yeah, exactly. And
I get that
when I saw it in the '80s, I didn't know, you know. But when, years later, I'm kind of like, well, it kind of bugs me a little bit, but not bugs me enough that it takes away from the film. You know, and I just, you know, kind of like, you know, you could have left it nameless. But it's just one version of the film.
It is. And it's like when us true comic book fans, we, you know, we realize that there's many, many versions.
But, you know, so Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton, obviously the two big stars in this role. But the supporting cast does a good job, too. You know, a lot of people didn't know, like, who Vicki Vale was at the time. A lot of people forget Vicki Vale is one of Batman and Bruce Wayne's original love interests.
Oh, yeah.
Going back to Detective Comics early days. And that's why they brought Vicki Vale in. And people always wondered why they didn't do Catwoman in the first film. And, well, Selina Kyle wasn't his original love interest, if you can even call her a love interest.
Yeah, if you can call her that.
And I think Kim Bassinger did a good job in the role. She plays her part. She does a good job screaming when she needs to scream.
Yeah.
And she does a great job acting against these costume characters. And if you watch Kim now, another thing I didn't notice is her looks on her face when she sees these costume characters or sees a Joker of all this bizarreness going on around her. Kim really emotes it well. Like, man, this is nuts. And here I am in all these situations, but she handles the job acting-wise.
She's good. She's cool. And she came off, I like how she came off like kind of, you know, a little half-cocked whenever she's talking to the, I forget the story report, the beat reporter on Batman.
And Robert Wool's character.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name. Knox.
Knox.
Yeah.
Knox. And he's like, will you marry me? And she's like, nope. He's like, buy me lunch? Maybe. I'm alive. I eat light. And she's just like, I don't need you.
And Robert Wool's character, Knox, he's another character, is having fun in this film. He knows that it's a comic movie, and you can't take it overly seriously. You have to bring out a little bit of campiness in it, and he does that with his part.
Yeah, he's like, if he's on your payroll, how much is he getting paid?
Right. he asked some ridiculous questions in the movie, and it's just like, and I can't remember. There's another good one he asked him. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, he has some funny lines, but it's, you know, they kind of get lost in everything. It's easy to for his character to get lost, even though they really did like his character. He was originally going to die, but they kept him alive.
Right.
You know, he's like, I like you, Sally. That's why I'm going to kill you last. You know, but, you know, his character was awesome. They originally wanted Michelle Pfeiffer for the role, but Michael Keaton was dating her at the time. He thought it would be weird. Of course, he didn't think that was weird whenever the sequel came.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, I didn't know that. They wanted Michelle Pfeiffer, but they went with Kim Basinger because Michael Keaton thought it'd be awkward.
I knew she had screen tested for a role in Batman. I just didn't know that's why.
That was it.
So a couple of other important supporting characters that are important to the Batman mythos. This version of Alfred, you know, I think it's still my favorite. I like Michael Koff in the role. He's that older British butler that you see in the comics, who was always would make smug remarks to Bruce Wayne, but also would do whatever he could to help him on his quest, even if he didn't always agree on it. And I love Michael Caine in the Nolan films. Not sold on Jeremy Irons yet, but I go back to the Tim Burton films, and I think because we had him over four movies, he was my favorite Alfred.
Yeah, and he was really good. And whenever he's telling the stories, embarrassing stories to Vicki Vale, whenever they're having dinner in the breakfast room, they move from the dining room to the breakfast room because, you know, it's awkward in that room. It's just big. They can't even hear each other. And he's telling all these embarrassing stories about you know, Bruce Wayne as a child and the pony and him getting hurt with his ankle. And It was funny. You know, you could tell they were family.
He kind of grounds the film in a bit of reality amongst all these all the craziness going on in the world of costume superheroes. And another scene, one of my favorite scenes is, it's not in this film, but in Batman Returns, where he has Selina Kyle at the house and he has to leave and she wants to leave too because he has to go be Batman, she has to go be Catwoman. And how he juggles, they're both trying to make excuses while they're leaving the date.
Yeah.
And it's really funny. He just like, I'll take care of it. But a great actor. So Pat Hingle, who plays Commissioner Gordon.
Yes.
You know, he's a character actor, known for, he did a lot of Westerns in the 60s and 70s and even in the 80s. And so not the Gary Oldman of the world, not a big time actor.
No, no.
But he does his job. He's your prototypical police commissioner. He reads his lines, and I don't know if he brings in the extra role, but
yeah, he's there.
He's kind of the reality grounded character in the movie amongst all this nut houses that's going on.
Yeah, he is very grounded, and like you said, he's, you know, he came in like a lunch pail guy. He came to work, he did his job, and then movie's over with. You know, he didn't leave a black mark on the movie. And but it's like, you know, he wasn't, you know, to be fair, he wasn't giving, like, you know,
he wasn't given meat to work with, like, like Oldman was in the Nolan films. Yeah.
Where you had this big, you know, turning point where, you know, it really affected them, you know, their relationship. It was more like, okay, you know,
Commissioner Gordon's in the film, that's it.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if he's friend or foe, but whatever, you know.
Right. And if I'm mistaken, he was in all four, right? Even the really awful Batman Robin. Him and Michael Coffin, they were the only two actors that were in all four of them, if I remember right.
Correct.
Those are the main performances of the film. There are some interesting things, like the guy who played Porkins, I don't have his name in front of him, in Star Wars. Yeah. He's in it, and he gets shot by the Joker.
Yes.
And Billy Dee Williams, he played Lando Calrissian. Billy Dee Williams signed on to this because they told him he'd be playing Two-Face, and that was in his contract. And then they actually, whenever they came around to film Batman Forever, he wasn't in the Batman Returns script. And Billy Williams was okay with that. Mm-hmm. And Warner Brothers told him, well, we're going to bring you back for part three when it's time. And when they fired Tim Burton and brought in Joel Schumacher, they actually paid Billy Dee Williams off and bought him out of his contract.
Wow.
Sign Tommy Lee Jones to play Two-Face instead of Billy Dee Williams.
I wondered what happened with that. Because it's like, you know, he's Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Why didn't he be Two-Face?
And that was the only reason he signed on to the role, is he wanted a guarantee from Warner Brothers that he was going to get to play Two-Face in a future movie. And he never got to. Until last year in the Lego Batman movie, he does the voice of Two-Face in it. Even though he has like two lines in the movie, he's still the voice in it. And that would have been cool. I would have liked to have seen that eventually, gotten to see Billy Dee Williams play Two-Face. Interesting thing about that is that, you know, people make, and we're usually not too controversial on Rebel Radio, but you know, nowadays there's a big thing about diversity in films, and characters sometimes are changed by color or sex or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but Burton was trying to do it back then in 1989. He was going to make Robin black. He wanted Marlon Wayans to play Robin. It was number one choice. I still don't see it in the
Marlon
role.
Marlon Wayans.
I think it would have been bizarre.
Yeah. And
apparently he was, if Burton had come back for the third Batman film, apparently Marlon was just about signed until Burton backed off. So Burton was doing things back then. He was not afraid to be a little diverse with his characters.
I would have loved to see how that would just work out, but I'm more, you know,
yeah,
not just because I'm wearing a Vikings jersey, but I'm kind of a Viking. I'm just like, well, let's do it. Let's see how it turns out.
You know, it's... Is that weird to say back then? 1989 doesn't feel that long ago, but you didn't get as much diversity even then in films as you do now.
No, you don't.
And that's kind of crazy. So those are the main characters in Batman. And so, you know, I've been looking up some stuff, as you did too. Like, there were some unique things I found about this film that I didn't know about. And it mostly contains the stuff they deleted, you know, is what I found.
Yes.
Did you have anything? Did it have to do with deleted scenes?
You talking about the man? What was the deleted scene? There was
one simple unique fact is that the famous "I'm Batman" line was ad-libbed by Michael Keaton. In the script, it said "I am the Knight," and Michael Keaton forgot it and just said "I'm Batman."
Really,
it became the most famous script. Most famous line in the movie that to this day people still, you go to a convention, they cosplay and they're like, who are you? I'm Batman. You know, it's become a famous line for the film.
That was funny,
ad-libbed, because apparently Michael Keaton forgot what he was going to say. And there's a lot of unique deleted scenes from this movie. A lot of them were never filmed. They're mostly stuff in the script, and the most famous is going back to the Robin sequence. There was a whole sequence in this film that would have taken place shortly after the Joker left the apartment in the let's get nuts scene.
Yeah.
And where the Joker and them get in their van and they're pursued by, from what I, if I remember reading it right, unmarked cars, maybe they were police or something. And somehow they end up at the circus to try to escape. And of course, we all know what happens there. There's a scene with Dick Grayson's parents. They're killed at the circus. And Michael Keaton, Bruce Wayne, sees a kid and says, I'll take him in. But there's no actual appearance of Robin in the film. They were just going to have Dick Grayson in the film to make him Robin maybe the next one.
Okay.
None of it was ever filmed. It was storyboarded. And if you buy the Batman Blu-rays and DVDs, the whole storyboard sequence is on there.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
And if you go online, you can find the whole section of the script from the film talking about the whole Dick Grayson family Robin scene. And I guess there's parts of the script where maybe, I don't know, there's rumors that I think there's a script out there where he does appear as Robin more towards the end of the film. Mm-hmm. But originally the plan was just maybe introduce him and have him become Robin later. Because the script went through several changes before the one we went. There's a lot of talk that Tim Burton was changing the script on set. That he wasn't always happy with the script. And that things were changed on set. And so who knows what original version we may have gotten of Batman. That's probably the biggest deleted scene I found. The other small one was, and it's in the comic book, is when he's throwing money out at the end.
Yes.
The comics, the money is fake. And you see the Joker face on it. But they don't really show you that in the movie.
That would have been cool.
Anything you have unique stuff about this film?
I just thought it was cool. The people that could have been Batman. I always like the what could have been and playing the what if, you know, mental game. Like
Will Smith as Neo.
Yeah, like Will Smith as Neo. Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, Charlie Sheen.
I knew Costner was in the running.
Pierce Brosnan, Tom Selleck, and Bill Murray were all considered for the role of Batman. I would have liked Pierce Brosnan as Bruce Wayne.
But I remember Bronson was waiting in the wings to do Bond. Because he was told by the studio that he was probably going to be Bond and didn't want to take of another franchise. Because you remember in 89 was Timothy Dalton, I think, his other License to Kill, and that was his last film. And they told Bronson, look, you're probably going to be, you know, Bond in a couple years. And I think that was part of the deal, was like he wasn't sure what he wanted to do. You know, but I mean, I would imagine in 1987, 88, when they were casting this film, that any lead actor that had any sense was in the role for this, you would think.
I probably could have seen Charlie Sheen, too. I mean, just he would be a little bit more flamboyant with the women, though.
What was he known for, I guess, in the 80s? I mean, had he done Major League yet?
Hot Shots?
Had he done Hot Shots yet? Basketball? It seems like those were all early 90s, though. He had to be on a TV show,
was
we're not
he, was
thinking
he Wild
of.
Thing already?
That's one thing. I think Major League was right around the same time as Batman.
Yeah, maybe. You know? And then for Joker... Of course, we know Tim Curry. I didn't know William Dafoe, Tim Burry, David Bowie.
I knew William Dafoe had...
And James Woods.
I knew William Dafoe had a screen for it.
Yeah.
Burton really wanted to work with Bowie. It was like his dream was to work with David Bowie. And I don't want to quote wrong. I don't know if he ever did work with Bowie in any of his other movies. We'd have to look that up. But I know Burton really wanted Bowie to be in a Batman film, but he was just too busy touring and never could work it out. That would have been cool. Because just David Bowie's, I don't know what the word is, but his world, the David Bowie world, just seems like it would fit in Batman.
That would have, you know? Yeah, just over the top, labyrinth style. I mean, that and Tim Burton, that would have gone together like, you know, lamb and tuna fish.
Lamb and tuna fish.
Yeah, if I was to quote
that, just spaghetti. Lamb and tuna fish sounds gross.
You know, maybe you prefer spaghetti and meatball.
Spaghetti meatball sounds better.
And then I know we wanted to talk about marketing or toys or culture, but apparently in the months before Batman's release, there was a mass surge of pop culture merchandise being sold in the amount of $750 million in June of 1989, which is nuts for that time.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
One more deleted scene that I found online was there was a scene that was written but never filmed, which the Joker takes over one of the public ceremonies of the movie, and he actually holds the mayor hostage, and the Joker unveils a statue of himself, which is kind of campy.
That would be campy.
And apparently he laces the coffee in the police department with something to knock him out, not kill him, but it apparently would explain why there's no police at the parade.
Oh, okay.
And, and I found that online, kind of a bizarre, you know, scene.
Yeah.
The Joker unveils a statue of himself. I could see that happening.
That's funny.
You know, and so Yeah, marketing was a big part of this film. I mean, at this point, we had, you know, Star Wars and G.I. Joe and He-Man, all these films out there. And but Batman, you know, nowadays we get tentpole movies from almost March until the end of summer. You know, it used to be Memorial Day. Now the summer movie season's moved up. But in 1989, Batman was the biggest thing that summer, other than Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yes.
Which had come out in May. But the thing about Indiana Jones is that Indiana Jones was never the marketing juggernaut that Star Wars was, even though it was from Lucasfilm.
Correct.
But Batman was just itching because the toy company Kenner had Super Friends toys out there. And Super Friends was a huge line for them in the mid-80s, and it did really well.
And Toy Biz as well, right?
Well, Toy Biz was doing Marvel, and they were starting to take off with their toys and stuff. So Batman was just like a bomb waiting to explode as far as merchandise, you know? And that brings up to this part of the show where when we talk about movies, we're going to maybe discuss a unique collectible or a unique item that we found that may have been given away to the cast or things like that for different movies. And sometimes that's going to be challenging. Like if we do The Good and the Bad and the Ugly, for instance, it might be challenging to find a collectible that's out there.
Yeah,
you know, it's marketed for the toy.
It was really hard for me to find a good one with this.
I have one that I found just because I have memories of it, and that's the Batman cereal that came out. You can still buy a box of it for about $5, you know, at conventions. I don't know if I'd eat it. But and I remember it came with this bank, and I always wanted that Batman bank, but the stores never had the bank or they were
coin?
Taking It was like a little coin bank.
I have it at home.
Do you have the little Batman coin bank?
Yes, my son uses it.
But they were like, people would steal them off the packages and stuff. I'm sure I could find one at a con for a few bucks, you know?
Yeah.
And but I remember the Batman cereal was a cool collectible that I always thought was like, I remember eating the cereal. I remember my parents buying it, but I never got the damn bank.
It probably, yeah, like you said, probably because someone stole it before they bought it.
And I remember, I don't remember having a lot of Batman toys, but you know, 1989 was about that time though, too, where I was getting in junior high, almost starting high school. So I was getting away from toys. You know, I was growing up, and even though I buy toys now as an adult, but you know, there's that period in everyone's life where you don't play with toys and you get away from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened with Batman. So I don't really remember owning anything, you know? So did you find a unique thing from this film that was collectible wise?
Yeah. My uncle, he bought the replica Batman cowl, and he had it on his dresser on this like headrest to keep it from, you know, in case the latex got too hot in the summer. He kept it on there. And that was the most favorite thing that I ever saw. And whenever he wasn't at home and he was working at Kroger, I would wear it whenever he wasn't there. And it was very uncomfortable and it didn't fit very well because I was a kid and it was meant for an adult. But that was probably my favorite thing, even other than all the toys that I owned, because my mom, anytime that I wanted something, she'd try and buy like the whole set. So I had the flower squirting Joker, I had the Keaton Batman toy, and I had the Batmobile.
I also remember owning, I had on my wall the movie poster with just the logo, because to this day, it's still my favorite Batman costume. I like the Keaton costume, regardless of him not being able to move in it.
Yeah.
I just like the costume. I think it's really cool.
Simple.
And
armored, black.
So, and I like the logo. The gold logo to me, I thought was cool. And I remember having the poster on my wall with just the Batman logo. I probably bought it, or my mom bought it for me at Walmart or something for $5. It might not have been a real movie poster, but I remember having it on the wall, and that was cool to me. Just
I think
coming
you could
home
buy
every
it
day.
At Six Flags.
You probably can.
Yeah.
Just coming home every day and seeing the Batman poster on the wall was awesome. So some unique collectibles from the film. Would you change anything about this movie?
Man, maybe that Robin scene would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think that would be something that I would change. And then obviously making Joker the, you know, killer of Batman's parents, I would change that. But, you know, it's not now, before I was like, well, that's wrong, you know,
right.
And it bothered me. Now I'm just like, you know what? It's a movie, and there's different variations of Batman.
Right.
It doesn't trigger me in a sense. You know, maybe I'm just not as passionate about it, or, you know, maybe I just appreciate it like it is. It's a movie,
right.
And we appreciate it as
you
such.
Let it go as is. Yeah, there's not a lot I'd change. The Joker having a name thing, which I already mentioned, maybe. I would maybe back off a little bit on the campiness in it.
Okay.
Not much. Almost, I don't mind jokes in the movie, but Maybe just a little bit, you know, like the, mostly like the Prince, Dancing in the Prince song. Nothing against Prince. I love Prince.
Yeah.
But just like the walk in the art house and the dancing of that scene's kind of silly and ridiculous.
Yeah, I get
you. You know, I've never been a fan of that scene in the museum. It's
I
just
would have
like,
rather him take a crowbar to those.
Yeah, I like the end of the museum scene where Batman comes down and he's like, where does he get those wonderful toys?
You
know, that part is great, but just the whole dancing in there, that scene just, I've never been a big fan of that scene in the movie, you know.
And I like how it kind of reminds me of Justice League where, you know, Green Lantern is like, so you're human? And it's like they're like, oh, they're saying this guy, he drinks blood. And I'm just like, that's awesome, you know?
Yeah, they kind of,
the mystique of his character.
Right.
And how it traveled throughout, you know, that city of Gotham. It was that was pretty cool.
And people's loss in this is the idea that the Batman has just been out there briefly. The whole idea is the Joker's supposed to be his first real crazy that he faces. But yet, they don't push that because you don't really need to know that. It's almost like Batman has been around. This world just exists. And sometimes nowadays, these films spend too much time with too much exposition explaining things.
Yeah.
And not to start a rant about The Last Jedi, but I think that's why some people have hated on The Last Jedi, because Last Jedi just exists in a world and it doesn't over-explain things. And people are mad and they're like, well, why didn't explain this? It doesn't explain that. And we're getting into a time where things are cookie fed to them and everything's explained to them.
Yes.
And back then sometimes they made movies and you didn't have to know why this worked or why Batman was there or anything. It just is.
It's true.
You didn't have to know how he got the Batmobile fixed or where he got his costumes or anything like that.
It's like, you know, whenever some of these movies came out, like A New Hope, it's like, you know, did anyone say, oh, you know, light lasers, they go on forever. How is that constructed? How is that engineered? And it's like, you know what? They made it out of a flash from a camera, and that's all you need to know. And they made it into something awesome. Just watch the movie and enjoy it. Don't overthink it. Sometimes when, you know, you overthink something too much, you know, you lose sight of how entertaining and how awesome it is.
Exactly.
I think that's you know, unfortunately what happens in some of these movies.
Yeah.
Except for Genesis, because that shit is weird. You know? Yeah. Going back in time. But then, you know, you're, it's weird.
So, well, how do you think Tim Burton's Batman holds up today?
I think it still holds up today. I think more movies should be done the way that movie is done. Like, you know, like we said, they cut out the intro. With Batman versus Superman, I almost feel like maybe they shouldn't have done the scene with Jeff.
It's funny you said that, because the more that I've gone back and watched this film and then watched Batman Returns, it's like, I'm fine with what Marvel has done with their universe, but at the same time, why can't we just go back to a film being a film? And if you make a Flash film and Batman appears in it, or like the Suicide Squad film where Batman appears in it, great. Mm-hmm. But do you necessarily have to have them all connect? Why can't they connect just by existing in that universe? You know, why do they have to connect by having a bigger story? And it almost makes me wish that DC would just scrap their film universe and just make movies to make movies. Let's just have a cool Flash movie, a cool Green Lantern movie, a cool Superman film. And if someone happens to appear, they happen to appear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I really thought about watching Batman. It's like, man, why can't they just be like this? Why does it have to be a universe on screen? You know? And I think Marvel has done a pretty good job of that, especially the early days.
Yes.
The characters were just in their film. You might get a little cameo at the end from Nick Fury or whatever, and it all connected. Now it's starting to get a little more mumbled jumbled, but hopefully it all comes together in May with Infinity War.
Yeah, that's what I'm
thinking. But you know, that's probably a big thing about how it holds up today. It almost makes you long for the films to be like they were back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Tim Burton's Batman does hold up very well. I think you could have a screening where you sat people down and you showed them Batman, and then you showed them Wonder Woman, and then you showed them a Marvel film, and I think all three of them would do really well.
I think so, too.
And you just pick a Marvel film. Whatever would go dark, what would go, what, you know, Batman, Wonder Woman, Ant-Man. Three completely different kind of style of films, but they might go together really well. You know, even though I'm not a huge Ant-Man fan, but I would throw that in
different.
There.
Different.
And I'm trying to avoid what movies we would screen there, because
our
friends of our show, Matinee Heroes, they knew where what movie would you screen with us. We're not trying to do that, because we love Craig and, well, I don't know Alan, but I'm going to say I love him anyway. But I love Craig and Alan's show, and I don't want to do what they do with their show.
We want to be our own man.
And so, before we finish out our show with news briefs and a couple other things, any final thoughts on Tim Burton's Batman?
man, it's too bad we didn't see more films from him. Because I think the Batman series could have gone in a different direction.
I wanted to see more Burton Batman, but I just didn't want to be weird like Batman Returns.
Yeah, that was
you know, weird. I would have maybe liked to bring it back around to how he did Batman. Because Batman's a pretty straightforward film as far as Tim Burton. It's got some Tim Burton weirdness in it, don't get me wrong, but it's not as bizarre as Batman Returns.
Yeah, with, you know, Oswald Cobblepot as a baby grabbing a cat and yeah. pulling it into his cage and seemingly eating it.
Oh, another a quick note. Batman kills a lot in these films.
He does, man.
Like in the Nolan films, it's like, No kill, no that's guns, what a Catwoman. Us
from the bad
man,
guys.
I didn't realize how much he kills these movies. Dropping bombs, blowing up buildings. Yes. I'm like,
knocking people down the sewer, dropping
Arnold
a bomb.
Arnold Schwarzenegger Commando Batman in this, man.
It really is, man.
I mean, it's crazy. And I'm okay with it. It's just like, I didn't really realize it having not watched the film. You know, I don't think I've seen parts of Batman since the Nolan films, but it's probably been since Batman Begins, I really sat down 10 plus years and really watched Batman from beginning to end and paid attention to it. You know,
that's why I had to watch it so much. You know, we've got kids. It's hard for me to pay attention. So
exactly.
Finally, I was able to watch the whole thing through about, you know, 3 hours before I came here.
Yeah.
Every time I was like, the first time I was like, okay, I watched the first like hour and 20 minutes. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to have to start in the middle and then trying to pay attention and as much as I could, so I had to keep refreshing myself.
And right.
Finally, I made it through today because they were tired and they slept.
It's gonna be hard. Like I have a copy of the new Blade Runner. The thing's 3 hours. It's gonna take me 3 days to watch it. An hour a day.
Yep. Hour a day.
We kids, I can't put it on until night and everything. So
man.
So that's our thoughts on Tim Burton's 1989 Batman. So this part of the show is where we tell you the news briefs, what's going on. See, we told you we're still gonna give you the latest goings on, talk
Absolutely.
About a few things, and there's not been a whole lot going on.
No, there really hasn't.
A lot of when will we get our first look at Han Solo kind of going on.
Yeah.
A lot of talk that we might get it during the Super Bowl. A lot of people thought we might get it before the Super Bowl. Because the movie comes out in May, and there's been no marketing yet for this film.
Didn't the producer die?
No. She used to produce. She works for Lucasfilm and Fox, yeah. I think, but not Kathleen Kennedy, not the main producer.
No, not Kennedy.
No, it was a different lady. She produced one of the Indiana Jones films. I think she's worked for Lucasfilm at a time. I can't remember, but you're right. Someone did pass on.
I think the picture showed a Solo movie, a Han Solo.
I think she might have been one of the producers on it, maybe, or something.
Maybe she worked
yeah.
on it somehow.
And
I saw where Robert Downey Jr., he bought all the cast members from, you know, from the Avengers film. All new chairs, just little random things in the news. There's supposed pictures of Captain Marvel, but I don't know if they're real. You know, it's been really slow. Of course, China shutting down Last Jedi, but they're not big into sci-fi. Yeah. They don't understand it because, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? Stick with Star Wars. The trailer came out for the final episodes of Star Wars Rebels, which if you've listened to Rebel Radio in the past, we've talked about this show. We're big fans of it.
Oh, yeah.
There's only 6 episodes left. They're going to air it over 3 weeks, 2 episodes each, so the last night being an hour and a half. So I guess I mean it's 3 episodes last night.
Mm-hmm.
And bets on who survives? I'm thinking Kanan's a goner.
Yeah.
I think
Ezra survives.
I think Ezra and Ahsoka go the way of where she went after Clone Wars. Maybe they just go off somewhere.
Yeah.
I think Zeb, maybe.
Zeb, maybe.
He might survive. Maybe he stays with Hera. You know, because we know Hera survives.
Yeah. Because
apparently she's in Rogue One by name, at least.
By name.
But, man, I'm going to be sad to see the show go because I really enjoyed it. But I'm also looking forward to seeing how it ends. It has been probably my absolute favorite animated series of Star Wars is done. I love the Clone Wars, but Rebels has been absolutely amazing.
It's been a lot better than the Clone Wars.
You know, there's been a lot been said about the Disney fine of Star Wars, which I don't really understand because Disney just writes the checks. They really don't control Lucasfilm. It's its own entity, just like Marvel Studios. So this has all been done by Dave Filoni, Kathleen Kennedy, and people who work at Lucasfilm, and Star Wars Rebels has been absolutely excellent.
This is similar to, it's like if you guys drink beer, you know, Budweiser likes to buy these little breweries. The little breweries are still making the beer.
Right.
It's just Budweiser that's cutting the checks.
Yeah, I mean,
and running the truck.
Might as well get used to it because I'm telling you, Disney's going to buy everything and they're going to rename the Earth Disney World.
Exactly. The whole world. We're going to see Mickey Mouse whenever we're taking a pee in the friggin' urinal. We're gonna pull the handle and it's going to go, woohoo, hello. Woo. I don't know. But, you know, that's where it's going. You know, I saw this really cool. The picture that you shared the other day, that was hilarious. It's like, where did you guys come from?
Oh.
He's talking to the Iron Man's talking to the mutants. He's like, oh, we came from a rift that was created by Reed Richards. And Iron Man's like, what? And then one of the other characters was like, Disney and Fox struck a deal. Oh, okay. It's
pretty much.
Yeah. You know, while we're on animated, I did want to bring up Dragon Ball Super, since I don't know if we have a whole lot of fans that watch Dragon Ball Super. Some people heard that it's coming to an end. It's not coming to an end. It's taking a hiatus. The English dub is going to have to catch up. So, you know, Chuck Huber and company are going to have to catch up to the end of the Tournament of Power, which is going to end in about 12 episodes, episode 135, I believe, or 133. And then we're going to have a hiatus until December, where they will release a new movie that we will be able to go see in theaters. And then it'll start right back up with a different timeline. So we'll see where the series is going. But been an exciting run for the past 3 years of Dragon Ball Super.
One of these days I'll watch it, if it ever becomes available streaming. Because, like, man, the Blu-rays and DVDs are expensive.
I cheat. I go on Facebook and I watch it on Facebook. And then with AT&T...
Well, no, the new show is a little easier to watch. But I'm talking, like, don't you kind of have to watch Dragon Ball Z to watch this?
It's good if you have seen Dragon Ball Z. And you can... Heck, you know, Frank doesn't like franchises anymore. You can see if he wants to give away those Dragon Ball Z DVDs, because he has the entire collection. I only have up to, I think, maybe season 7. I think he has, like, all 10. Yeah,
part of his midlife crisis.
Yeah, I don't know if he has Dragon Ball GT, but this basically wipes out Dragon Ball GT, I think. Some people argue that, you know, this GT hasn't happened yet. Because of how it starts the timeline, kind of like what's a movie like Jurassic World, you know?
Yeah.
You're like which movie?
It reboots without rebooting.
Yeah, reboots without rebooting.
Yeah.
It takes into concept some of the old canon, but it gets rid of some things.
Yeah.
It's fun though. The old school stuff you might bore yourself with because, I mean, I tell you, they spent episodes charging up the first battle. Between Goku and Frieza, whenever Goku becomes a Super Saiyan and things really get interesting, it's the longest battle in anime history, lasting 3.5 hours. So just two people fighting is 3.5 hours, and it's not even the whole season. Not even half the season. So some of these episodes just include a transformation and then commentary from other Z fighters. With that being said... you know, we need to get with Download This. Download This in a while.
Yeah, Download This part of the show where we tell you what we've been streaming or watching lately on or playing. It can be a video game. It can be what we've been streaming, what we've been watching. I guess I'll go first. I've mostly been trying to get caught up with Marvel stuff. I finished The Punisher, and now I'm trying to finish The Defenders. I got two or three episodes left of that. The Punisher is very good. Starts out a little slow, but it gets better. I've actually liked The Defenders more than a lot of people said that they did. Yeah. I've kind of enjoyed it.
Because it's more Daredevil-based.
Yeah. I mostly stream, so I haven't played anything. Well, I did download that Batman Telltale game, but I haven't played it yet on my PlayStation 4. Those are probably the things I download and stream most, mostly watching shows. It took me 2 months to finish The Punisher, but I finally finished it. And now I'm trying to finish The Defenders. And I have gone back and watched, talking about anime... I watched Akira the other night just for the heck of it because it's now on Hulu and I haven't watched in a while. I watched a couple episodes of the Ghost in the Shell standalone complex TV show. It's not bad. I guess you have to get into it more. It's a little, nothing really happens the first couple episodes, but I guess you got to get a little further in. And so that's kind of what I've watched lately. Just some old anime and streaming stuff on Hulu and Netflix. And I did watch an old Western yesterday with one of my favorite actors, Lee Van Cleef, called A Day of Anger, which was kind of a spaghetti Western that he did without Clint Eastwood. Lee Van Cleef doing his own thing. And it was good. It's a little awkwardly paced for a Western. There's almost like three separate stories in the movie, but yet they all tie together. But it's well done, really well shot film, and a great musical score. You know, but those spaghetti Westerns always had those great musical scores. So what have you been downloading and streaming lately?
Well, I just talked about Dragon Ball Super. I watch that every week religiously. Gohan just got knocked off, which if you are a Gohan fanboy like I am, I'm very disappointed. I think Frieza is planning something to undermine the Z Fighters. But other than that, I have had access to a PS4 now that my sister has moved a little closer. And I can tell you right now that the Dragon Ball Z Fighter is out on beta. And it plays like Marvel vs. Capcom, and it is awesome as heck. It's better than Tenkaichi Budaki from PS2. It's better than Xenoverse, and it's a hell of a lot of fun to play. And I can't wait to see the two voice actors, ones that play Goku and Vegeta, go at it, because that's the thing. They want to they challenged each other. And they built this up. It's funny, you know, got the voice of Goku. He's sitting in front of the fire with a pipe, and he's like, "Are you challenging me to a duel?" And so I can't wait to see that. But yeah, the beta version's out. I believe it's on sale for the whole version on the 27th of this month. So look to download that, you know, in the next couple days or so.
All right. So look for that. So that's what we've been downloading lately, and this is part of the show where we're going to tell you what the next movie is going to be so that you come back for more. This is like the trailer. Because, See, back in the old days, for people that don't know, the reason they called them trailers was you used to have to sit through the credits in a movie.
Yes.
And they would show you the trailers at the end of the film to what was coming next. You come back to see John Wayne's next adventure, or Humphrey Bogart, or in this case, Bruce Lee.
Humphrey Bogart, yes.
Our next movie next time is going to be a favorite of Matt's, and we're going to do Bruce Lee's classic Enter the Dragon.
Yes.
And is, of course, directed by Robert Klaus and came out in 1973. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be our next film, is Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon. And looking forward to doing that one. That's, you know, for a lot of people, that was their first exposure to Bruce Lee, because that was like his big film.
That was the big film.
And then people, if you lived in cities that had art house theaters like L.A. or California, you might go watch stuff like Chinese Dragon, Fist of Fury, and things like that if it played in your town. But then, those movies, those Kung Fu films, didn't always make it to every city.
No.
But Enter the Dragon was like his first big, was probably one of his bigger releases.
Yeah.
And I know Game of Death was huge too, because it had Chuck Norris in it.
Game of Death.
But
Big Boss, the Chinese Connection was cool.
Yeah. But Enter the Dragon might be like,
That's his flag.
You're more the Bruce Lee expert, but I think it's his flagship film.
It is. It definitely portrayed him as more of a philosophical fighter, and it showed his philosophy and teaching. There, in the special edition that I own, they have the undeleted clips where he's actually teaching people, and it's the same thing he taught his students at that time.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting, and it's very cool. It's definitely, you know, the movie to associate with his name if you were to pick one.
All right, so that'll be what we're talking about on the next episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, is Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon. We hope you enjoy listening to us talk about Tim Burton's 1989 Batman. And that's all we've got for today, but yeah. Go to TrustMeMyJedi.com for all your Rebel Radio Podcast needs, and follow us on Facebook and everything. And as always, thank you for listening. And this has been Mark.
This has been Matt the Electric Monkey.
Just go there and do it,
man.
Hey, you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. My name is Sean Patrick Flannery, and I hope you dig the podcast.
This is Chuck Huber. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Stop being so awesome.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
Roper, Williams, and Lee, the Deadly Three, penetrate the secret chambers of an evil island empire.
What do you know about Han? He lives like a king on that island, totally self-sufficient.
A fortress without walls, protected by an invincible army that needs no ordinary weapons. This is Enter the Dragon, the first martial arts film produced by a major Hollywood studio. John Saxon is Roper. He was in it for the money. U.S. karate champion Jim Kelly as Williams. He was there because he had no choice. Black Belt Hall of Fame, undisputed martial arts champion, and international film star Bruce Lee. His job was to get them out alive.
I'm hoping you'll join us, represent us in the United States.
You want me to join this?
Roper, Williams, and Lee. Just when they think they've broken the secret of the island, they find there is no escape from the inscrutable Han. Warner Brothers presents Enter the Dragon, where the world's greatest martial arts athletes meet the ultimate challenge with the most ancient and deadly of weapons, the human body. Enter the Dragon, from Warner Brothers.